part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm here doing part. I'm here doing part-time. I'm here doing part. I'm here doing part-time. Fanboy.com.
Let's just start off by saying that my name is Christian Horn. This is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. We have a very special guest on the line. We were just practicing the pronunciation of the last name. I'm going to try and get it right. Brett Weldley, right?
Yep, you got it.
All right. Great, great. Awesome, awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me on this episode of the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. I appreciate your time. We should say right off the bat that the reason that we are here is because there is another issue of Starlight on Kickstarter, which is a book that you are the artist on, correct?
Correct.
Correct. And are you also considered one of the co-creators as well? Or is it, are you like hired hand artists? Like, how does it work with Travis and Gregory?
Well, the origin of this one is that Travis and I were heading to Burning Man one year, and we were talking about comics, and we got on this topic of things that we used to really like, and we were both fans of Power Pack.
Oh, great! It was
both an early comic of ours that we were both really into, and we started thinking about what would we do if we did something with Power Pack, just because we were bored, and it just started evolving and becoming its own thing, and it ended up becoming what is now Starlight. Travis and I sort of originated it. Greg came on to help write it. And my responsibility at Overcast Comics is obviously doing the art for this book, but I also do all the design and layout and working with the printers and stuff and
the
all
hard
that.
Stuff. So I'm, the hard stuff.
Yeah. So I'm technically art director as well. So nice. We're just doing it all, really.
Yeah, nice. Also, you guys are up to issue 6 at this point. I went back and looked through my archives, and I can't believe it's been... Last time I chatted with Travis and Greg was April 1st, 2020. April Fool's Day on 2020, which is at least that's when the podcast went up.
Yeah, that would have been the first issue.
First issue. And I was actually reading through the issues that I have. I think I have 1 through 4. I might have missed 5. The whole reason that we got reconnected, and I should let people know out there, sometimes things end up in my spam folder for some reason, which is weird. So I was just looking through spam promotions, like in Gmail, and I was like, oh, wait, there's another issue of Starlight. And I haven't been on social media much lately, like all the time. So I think I must have missed issue 5. But yeah, I've been a supporter, at least a digital supporter, from the beginning. So congratulations on getting to issue 6.
Thanks. It's been something. Like I haven't done any self-publishing since I really started in this industry. And so getting back into it has been an interesting journey. But also, there's just so much, it's so more accessible than it used to be. Print on demand, you could just do it all yourself fairly easily and inexpensively compared to what you could do like 20 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, is that how long you've kind of been in the comics game? Because I know that like one of your claims to fame that Travis kept mentioning to me when we were emailing back and forth is the Surrogates comic, which kind of got turned into, didn't kind of get turned, did get turned into a film. How long have you just generally been making comics?
I've been making comics since I was about 8. I got into it professionally in 2000. So I've been doing it for a bit.
Well, now 23 years if you're a professional. You know, again, congratulations on all the success with Starlight. When I was going through my social media feed and seeing some of the posts, I think that maybe Travis was putting up, he seemed a little anxious as far as the launch of this one, but you guys have already funded. So again, I thank you for your time for coming on, because, you know, some people be like, why do I need to go on a podcast? We've made our money, you know, that sort of thing. But what do you think the anxiety was like around this particular issue? Because it seems like you guys funded right away, and obviously you've been funding. Why do you think that this issue was a particular, might have been stressing, you know, I don't know if it was just him or all of you, or it was a thing of consternation. Is have things been harder on Kickstarter, like in general, or?
No, I think there's always some anxiety going into any launch, that you're hoping something, everything goes as right as you can. We ran into a problem on the second issue. We ended up having to do the Kickstarter twice.
Oh, really?
Because the first time we didn't make it because Facebook had changed their algorithm in the midst of it. And so we went from having we did the first issue largely on Facebook, and between that and the second issue, they had changed things, so we weren't getting any juice there. So we had to redo the second one. And so there's always been sort of like this, like, gosh, we hope this goes well. And on the funding thing, like, we ask for a fairly low minimum. It's not necessarily like, oh yes, we're super flush with cash now or anything. Like, it's pretty bare bones what we're kind of doing on this. You know, I do a lot of other books on the side, and you know, we're just trying to do this thing that you know, gives us the ability to do what we want, and kind of when we want and how we want.
Yeah,
basically all the things that you can't necessarily get through a publisher.
Sure. I mean, one of the things that I've noticed, like, while going through my files today was, I mean, you guys have been pretty consistent. I mean, it's obviously taken, what, like 3 years to get to like issue six, but there's still a consistency there, right? Like, I mean, some people just disappear like off the radar. Like, and that's something that people have to expect from like independent comics. But it seems like you guys have had, I mean, obviously there have been personal issues that I've been privy to, because, you know, I see some of the posts on like on Facebook every once in a while. Again, not on social media as much as I used to be, but, you know, I'll check in every once in a while, especially when I'm posting up episodes of this podcast. But like, I mean, it counts for something that you guys have pretty much like kept going, right?
Well, I have a definite sort of professional thing where I have to finish these things. I have to get them done. And so I've never not finished something, but definitely some of the thing, like definitely doing it yourself, like, can take up a lot of time that you weren't expecting to need. And issue five, we definitely ran into some problems with production on that, and it took quite a while to get that one done, and it felt like almost an accomplishment getting that issue done more than almost any other. And so we were happy to finally, we're finally on to six, and we're looking at completing the series by the end of the year.
Got it. Finishing the whole thing.
We've definitely been dragging our feet a little, just getting our feet wet on doing Kickstarters and figuring out like how to do them. And it's been trial and error. You know, I don't have a you know, big history in self-publishing, and but I know enough about what I'm doing printing wise that I can make a nice looking product.
Sure.
It's just the actual getting it to people and doing all the crowdfunding and stuff, and that's generally what Travis is more suited for.
Got it. One of the sort of things that I kind of was thinking about, well, I mean, one of the things that we should say is like, what is Starlight? Like what it's about? What is it about? Because I mean, you mentioned Power Pack, and maybe I can mention a little story about Power Pack later on. I think I've mentioned it on this podcast before, but it kind of ties into Starlight a little bit, actually the use of drugs, but anyway, not my use of drugs. I'm just saying like, in any case, what is Starlight about for anybody who may not have come across it yet?
Sure. It's about a couple kids who were former superheroes when they were young and lost their powers at one point and became just normal everyday kids who ended up becoming sort of raver burnouts. And they get kidnapped by aliens and end up getting back their powers, but, you know, at what cost? And they fight, you know, alien pirate cats and spider wizards and all sorts of weird things that we can come up with in space.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny now that you mentioned the Power Pack, like I'm thinking about it and I'm like seeing the influence there. I'm like, oh yeah, like, you know, the space aliens, and then you've got like, obviously you don't have any of that, but like they were being chased.
I was definitely inspired by, like, you know, you got the grasshopper guys and and stuff, and yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's definitely kind of, I never would have thought of it until like you kind of mentioned it. But I mean, like one of the things that I remember in the original interview that we were kind of like going back and forth, you know, with Travis and Greg, where it was kind of like compared to like child stardom, right? Like when you know, when they're young and they're, because I went back and read the issues that I have this morning and I was like, oh, I forgot. Like they were like kids. Like I remembered them sort of being like teens, right? But they're not necessarily teens. They're like maybe preteens and like kids and, you know, like you said, like Power Pack and stuff like that. And then one of the things that I remember in the original interview that we were talking about was like child stars, like how everyone's like, oh, we love, you know, whatever, Punky Brewster, I'm dating myself, or that sort of thing. And then, you know, some of them like disappear, right? Like, or try and grow into and become celebrities. You know, the actress Soleil Moon Frye actually became a healthy adult at, you know, one point and pursued other things. But, you know, some of them just get stuck in acting and it ends up kind of badly. That was sort of the thing that we were kind of going back and forth about. Like, is that something that you remember kind of like diving into, like when you were coming up with the concepts of this?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely that thing where, you know, the former childhood stars that become, you know, burnouts and all, you know, get involved in all sorts of not positive behaviors.
And, yeah.
You know, definitely we had these two kids that, you know, both Travis and I are big on the EDM scene. And Travis is a former rave promoter. So,
yeah.
We definitely go towards that community, and we definitely set out to make some sort of book for that community, because there just isn't any, you know, rave comics really, or anything, you know, related to that scene. So we thought, you know, we could bring, I mean, well, obviously we were heading to Burning Man, so that was a thing we were thinking about at the time, but you know. Yeah, I mean, we both have a real love for Power Pack, and yeah, we both follow June Brigman on Facebook and chat with her, and you know, it's just been something we've always as, you know, those early 80s comics that both Travis and I got into at the time have been definitely like influences on kind of what we want to do.
Yeah. No, I mean, that is one of the things I was thinking while rereading the issue, the EDM or like raver or whatever, like club sort of scene and stuff like that. And one of the aspects of the character, and I hope I'm not spoiling it, is kind of like the thing that she kind of has to do drugs to enable her powers. as I mean, they're not adults, right? They're still kind of like teenagers, or like,
oh, they're well, she's 16 and he's 18 or 19. Yeah.
And I'm guessing, like, as sort of the, you know, as sort of like developing a comic, you know, like about teenagers and thinking about like the club scene or the EDM scene and stuff like that. Are you guys concerned about like any kind of like negative connotations that might have towards that scene? You know, because I mean, I was young once and I went to clubs and stuff, and you know, you definitely had people who were more into controlled substances or uncontrolled than others, right? But I'm just like using that as, and this will, because it ties into Power Pack, I promise you, or at least my Power Pack experience with my young daughter. Like, any thoughts on kind of that? Because it's interesting. I love the, one of the aspects of the book is that they sort of get kidnapped by aliens, and there is a journalist, like kind of like a Gonzo Inquirer kind of like YouTube journalist that gets kidnapped with him. And he's all hung up on the aspect of like, wait, you have to do drugs? And like, do you have to do drugs? Did you have to do drugs when you were like little kids and stuff like that? Any thoughts on that? And like, what sort of possible positive or negative connotations that may have towards the scene in general? Because it's obvious that this character, the younger girl, kind of is tied up in that scene, maybe more than her brother, right?
I guess so. The thing I like about the Roger character, the sort of dad that's there, is sort of he is the audience. He's the one asking all the questions about what is going on. That's really one of the only issues in it that sort of makes it sort of a mature reader's book, is that there is some drug use to get the powers going. It's not really a spoiler. Like, her powers are powered by ecstasy. But it's, you know, obviously in that scene, like, that's not too big of a deal. And it's, you know, drug use is something that is prevalent in society.
At this point,
especially with legalized weed. I mean, I can go outside my door in Portland and go in any direction in four blocks and hit a dispensary.
Same here in LA.
It's not a big deal, but you know, there are parts of our country that, you know, where it's a felony to have an oil cartridge on you. You know, so it's it's a different world depending on where you are.
Sure.
But, you know, we wanted to do something where, you know, I mean, there's not a lot of drug use and it's not done in any sort of like negative way. Like, in fact, it's used in a what we would consider a fairly positive way.
Sure. Sure.
But yeah.
Yeah. If you're using it to activate. Yeah, I mean, if you're using anything to activate your powers and escape from aliens, I think that's a positive. Like,
hey, to, makes lights pretty.
To a certain extent. No, I mean, that's the funny thing, right? Is like, we mentioned Power Pack, and Power Pack is considered kind of like a wholesome book, but like the way I'm bringing it around is, it's funny because when my daughter was younger, much younger, like maybe 10 or whatever, maybe even younger than that, like I bought like a Power Pack trade for her and thinking like, oh, you're going to love this. And, you know, I would sit down and read them with her. And at one point they, you know, and it is, Power Pack is kind of like a wholesome Marvel property. One of the properties that for years I've just been like, why has this not been developed into anything? Like, that's, it's absolutely perfect for, you know, whatever, the Marvel machine, right? But while I was reading the book, they had a crossover with Cloak and Dagger, right? And I don't know if
I remember that.
Yeah, you remember Cloak and Dagger? So Cloak and Dagger have their origins bound into drugs. Like, that's how they got their powers, right? And something which they kind of avoided when they adapted it into a TV show. But I specifically remember that they were fighting heroin dealers, and I'm sitting there reading it to like my 8, 9, 10-year-old, and I was reading something, like one of the balloons, and I think it was Cloak or Dagger or something, and they were like, we have to stop this shipment of heroin. And I'm reading and I stopped at heroin. And my daughter goes, wait, wait, you have to read that word, Daddy. Read that word, that word. And she goes, hero. And I'm just like, oh my God, what am I doing? Like, I was just like, I didn't remember, you know, the team up with Cloak and Dagger. And it just happened to be in this trade that we bought. And I was just like, obviously my 8, 9, 10 year old didn't know what heroin was, but I was just like, I'm a bad dad. Like, you know what I mean? I just had that moment of anxiety. You know what I mean?
It's so funny revisiting 80s stuff and even stuff we considered like a-okay at the
time.
Yeah, yeah. There's some problematic stuff in it for sure.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And it's funny how wild of a time like that was. Like even children's entertainment was kind of off the rocker at that point.
Yeah.
Very dark, very, you know, very
definitely
strange.
Definitely, definitely. So I guess one of the things I wanted to ask you about was sort of the, obviously it's been like several years and you've been working in comics a long time, but I definitely noticed a transition between the style of the first issue and the fourth issue. Like by in the first issue, things are like, I mean, everything looks great, you know, not criticizing anything at all, but like in the first issue, everything is, the lines are a bit, particularly when it comes to the aliens, they're a bit rougher, they're a bit rawer, they seem like you're working through things a bit quicker. And by the time I get to the fourth issue, at least the cat aliens, to me, everything seems like very, the line work seems a little bit smoother, it seems a little bit more composed, it seems less like sort of sketchy. Can you talk to me a little bit about the evolution of the art in these issues? Because I mean, obviously you've got your style and I've seen your Etsy shop, and anybody who is listening to this should go check out your beautiful watercolor prints. They're absolutely astoundingly gorgeous. But did you have more time to work on it? Were you developing like a style for this book as you went through? Like what sort of changes did you make in your own production as far as like going through this book? Through the whatever 3 years that you guys have been producing it?
Yeah, I mean, there was inevitably, anytime you make a series between the first issue and the last one, you're going to figure out what you're doing with it.
Sure.
Somewhere in between there. And the first issue is always just trying to figure out what it is that you want to do with it.
Yeah.
How everything looks. And things do kind of change over time, especially since we've had like 3 years to work on this as opposed to just like shoving it out every couple months. And so style has changed slightly. But the biggest thing that's happened in between when I did the first issue and the current issue is like I got an iPad.
I was going to say, is
the simple answer to that. I had been working sort of a hybrid traditional pencils, and then I would scan those in and then color them digitally. But now I just do everything 100% on the iPad.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. So like I like to draw too. I'm not making comics on Kickstarter or professionally. My graphics work is used someplace else. But when I do draw like the comics that I'm working on, or the comic that I work on, the thing that I've definitely transitioned more towards digital. And the one thing that I used to love is just pencils, just drawing with pencils. Like love the feel of pencils. I love the touch of, I love, you know, doing all. And now if I'm working in pencil, it's like quick, 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 quick. And then just trying to refine everything digitally. Do you miss the sort of traditional workflow because I did look at the material at the end of issue one and at the end of issue four, and I was like, oh, he used to do quick sketches and then he would light box them, and then, you know, you would do them in like red pencil and stuff, and now you're completely working in Procreate. You know, obviously there's a reason for that. You know, sometimes people find digital art easier, or they find the results that they get like quote unquote better. You know, I don't know that you can necessarily compare the two, but do you miss like the traditional workflow, or has just, you know, working digitally, you're just like, no, this is great, I'm never going back, that sort of thing?
I mean, occasionally, like, I'm not 100% digital these days. Like, I'll still do commissions by hand or do, like,
sure.
the watercolor stuff by hand. I do less and less of that as I go. Like, I just pretty much do watercolor stuff for commissions or for Etsy prints or whatever.
Yeah.
But I kind of have a similar workflow now, but it's so much faster and more flexible.
Got it.
Because I can sit there and I can scribble out everything, but then I can go in and just kind of adjust stuff, clean stuff up. You know, I can actually go kind of straight to ink.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of times just do the drawing and then clean it up, as opposed to like go through multiple passes of something. So I feel like I'm more efficient now doing it this way. And you know, there's a lot of things that you can do if you're just working completely digitally that you can't necessarily do by hand. Like I often will switch to color almost right after I've got like a loose sketch going. Like I'll throw in some flats just to see how much drawing I need to do after I get the coloring done.
Uh-huh.
Whereas if you're doing everything in a more traditional workflow of pencils, inks, colors, like you have to know everything that you're going to pencil on the first round, everything you're going to ink and everything you're going to color like ahead of time. But with this, you can kind of move back and forth and just complete it all at once.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. It's different, but it'd be really hard to go back at this point. Like on paper, I don't have like easy perspective grids I can just pop up and lock, and you know, it's just so easy comparatively.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, for the last 20 some years, I've used a Wacom tablet in Photoshop, and now I don't really use either. Like I use an iPad with an Apple Pencil, which the Apple Pencil is the best stylus I've ever used.
Yeah.
By far. Like it's got a nice weight to it, nice feel. It feels like a real pencil instead of like the Wacom pens.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not my favorite. Nice. But I mean they worked and you know, they do their thing, but it's just so much more of an elegant solution with the iPad.
That's interesting.
And Procreate's great. Like it's so just stripped down, and you know, it doesn't have all of the menus everywhere, and you just don't need it. Like it's just so efficient in getting you just to get a drawing down.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I mean, one of the things for me psychologically, I still have to sort of like print out, like I got these like cheap 11x17, you know, just regular paper, and I still have to like do it on the paper and then scan it and then go in. And I work in Clip Studio Paint, and I was just like, I was, for some reason, psychologically in my brain, I still want to do that like quick sketch thing on paper. And then I can go in, you know, which is silly. I mean, I've done digital straight from, you know, digital, but as far as like a comic page or when I'm attempting to do it, again, not doing it as much as like someone like you who's working on several books. I mean, it's taking me several years to come out with my second chapter of my, you know, my own like little comic. But that's the thing. Like, was there any psychological things that you had to get used to when you switched to like the iPad and stuff? Were you able to just jump, or like, did you need the security blanket of that? Because that's the thing, I look at it as my Linus security blanket. I just like, you know, doodling it out on an actual page and then scanning it and then, you know, and then going from there. Did you have any of that sort of thing, like when you first made the jump?
I mean, there's definitely a learning curve to it. And if, at first it was a little hard. I definitely think getting a matte screen on it helps. When the cheap like screen protector things,
uh-huh.
It definitely helps kind of drag down some of the glass part of it. It feels more like paper. But one of the things that I found after having been on the iPad for a bit and then going back to doing traditional stuff is paper is so hard to draw on once you get used to not doing on it and like not being able to like just zoom in on things.
Yeah. Have you ever done the pinching like, thing on paper? Like, have you ever done the, yeah. I've done that.
It's so messed up. And I'm just like, man, this is so hard and archaic. Why did I do things this way for so long?
I don't know. For some reason, like, I love it. And I don't consider myself, like, the greatest. Like, I think I get better results with what I'm doing digitally. Like, I'll be honest. Like, I look at stuff that I do and I'm like, it's more the brush strokes. And as far as, like, Clip Studio Paint, it's, like, the stabilization tools and stuff like that. Like, Photoshop, I could never get what I wanted. And from what I understand, I'm not a Mac head. I prefer PC. I know people are gasping. They're like, what? And, you know, now Android and stuff like that. But, like for me, it's just like, even though I can't get the results that I can get digitally there's something about paper and, you know, I'll look at the thing that I do on paper and I'll be like, this isn't as good, or I don't like it, or you know what I mean? I also beat myself up a lot about my own art, but as I'm sure a lot of, you know, artists do.
We all do.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, for me, like, just getting that thing on paper and, like, having the thing in front of me, even though I don't think I can get as good results as I could, you know, there's something about it that I'm, like, satisfied. Like, you know what I mean? And yeah. I wonder if you ever experienced that. I mean, I know it seems like now you're going back. But your watercolors are gorgeous. Like, do you do the watercolors in Procreate 2 at all? Or have you tried that? Or
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is you really can't replicate
paint.
You can get some sort of facsimile, but it's not the same. And so, like, actually watercolor painting, like, I still enjoy that. It is much more stressful than it used to be,
I think,
because of doing everything so digital, and you've got like one shot at this painting, and if you screw anything up, you're just gonna have to do it over from scratch pretty much.
Yeah,
you know, that there's always that sort of thing, but that makes you make better decisions along the way if you're doing things on that sort of no undo button kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you make more intentional marks when you're doing that instead of just screwing around on the iPad.
Yeah.
But definitely watercolor, like in person, like it has an effect. Like it looks cool on paper.
Yeah.
And that's not something you're gonna get digitally with anything. Like I have to do something different digitally, like I paint differently, but I use a lot of the same techniques.
Sure.
But yeah, doing something on paper definitely has a different thing to it, and this definitely has a different value to it.
Sure.
And but you know, at the same time, like I just you know, I was doing watercolor comics for a bit there, and
I did
a couple of them, and I just had to stop because it was, you know, if you're working in commercial art forms, everybody expects a certain level of flexibility, and doing things by hand anymore just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah. And speed, right? I mean, I think people want things.
Speed, yeah, definitely speed. I think you can get, I mean, depending on how you're doing stuff, you can get similar results by hand, or at least time wise. Like I can paint a book in about the same amount of time probably, but it's just easier to sit with an iPad and, you know,
yeah,
do all the things you can with it. Like it's so flexible.
Yeah. One of the things I really like in Starlight that I've seen is your use of color. Can you talk to me about that at all? Like your color, where did you learn color theory? Like, because I mean, it's interesting. I'm looking through the book and I'm like, oh wow, this is like a different color palette. It's like greens and oranges, or here's purples and stuff like that. And it doesn't, it's very vibrant and eye catching and stuff like that. But sometimes I'm like, oh, that is a different sort of palette than maybe I would think in a, like, whatever, quote unquote, average, like mainstream comic book. And it sticks out to me. I'm like, it makes the page like punch, you know what I mean? Or like jump out at me. Can you speak to like your use of color, your color theory, where you learned color, like that sort of thing?
Sure. I mean, growing up, I did not have a good grasp on color. I wanted to. I read a lot of books about color and painting and stuff, and I never understood it until college. And I had a couple really good color theory classes at SCAD, and it really kind of opened my eyes towards understanding how not just use, you know, just grabbing colors or whatever, but how to make it a unified thing. And I did teach myself some techniques based off of looking at other people's stuff and try to figure out some sort of workflow, because when I was getting into this, like, there was no YouTube or you know, really tutorials of any kind to doing this. You just sort of figured it out yourself or whatever. And so I would sit down with things and try to figure out how to get certain looks and vibes. And but once I did learn color, like, I really you know, color became the main thing. Like, I'm more attracted to texture and color than I am necessarily line. So I kind of spend more time. It's basically like a painting thing. Like, you use the line to hold in basically the color.
Yeah.
In painting, like, you don't have much line. It's just mostly paint.
Got it.
And you're not doing like heavy blacks or anything, any of that flat blacks. You're sculpting things with color. And so I've always wanted to kind of do things in that direction. Like, and definitely getting the iPad, like, my color palette changed once I did that a little bit. I was doing a different technique before. And once I stopped really using Photoshop for what I was doing, and I just keep discovering new ways of doing things, and then, you know, I'll find some new way, and then I'll be like, well, I don't want to do it the other way that I've been doing. This is ways better.
Sure.
Which does cause some, I guess, inconsistencies and things, because, absolutely, oh wow, this looks a little different than the last, but, you know, at the end of the day, I hope it just looks all right, and you know, no, nobody notices too much.
Yeah, no, it's great. I you mentioned textures, and that was one of the things that I noticed too, was like, as I was going through the book, there's a scene where they're kind of like running through the house, right? And they're running through, the two kids are running through their house because the aliens are coming, right? And they're one of them is like, go upstairs, and the other one's go outside, or, you know, something like that. And there's a scene that stuck out to me where it was like in the living room, and they're, or a dining room or whatever, kitchen. I can't remember the exact room, but it's a room. They're running through the house. And I looked at the page and I was like, oh, the line work is very like, you know, everything's there. But when I looked up kind of like at the ceiling, it was like a dash or a splash of like paint and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, that, what an interesting choice, because otherwise it would just be like a regular, you know, flat wall or something like that. And I was like, this makes it kind of, again, like I was saying, like it has a punch to it. It has like a, it makes things like more, you know, we just said textured, but textured maybe, or like, can you speak to me about that? Like the choices that you're making as far as like, you know, like there's a wall, but I'm going to, it looks like a splash of paint or something like that. Can you speak to me about that?
Yeah. I mean, definitely for me, the thing I'm trying not to do is to make it look flat lifeless. Sure. And like the easiest thing to do is just to overwork it into a place where it's just flat and lifeless. And I always had this thing where I always found like I had a lot more energy in my sketches than my like polished final stuff.
Yeah.
And so when I got into doing comics professionally, like I was much more using my sketch stuff as final art basically, and then just coloring it. And so I've always tried to keep that sort of energy in it. And I, when I'm inking now, like I use basically a pencil out of Procreate to do that with.
Yeah.
So it has a bit of texture to it. It has a bit of that, you know, not cleanness. I mean, I like texture. Like I get a attracted to it when I see it somewhere, you know, in paintings or just in life, like just detect, you know, playing video games, like I'll just get lost in the textures on the walls sometimes. There's so much interest in texture. I mean, that's from the paint thing, though. It's like you do watercolor or oil painting or anything, like it's all about that texture.
Sure.
Especially watercolor. Watercolor is very much about that paper texture, soaking up that color.
Yeah. So you're using water. It's not gouache or anything like that. Or how do you pronounce it? Wash or, you know.
Gouache. I've used gouache. Okay. It's very, very difficult stuff to use. It's not popular for a reason. It looks cool, though. Gouache gives you a real kind of chalky look that's unique. Sid Mead used gouache a lot, and a lot of those guys from the 50s and 60s used gouache, but not going to see that too much today. It's a lot easier. In fact, I don't even use watercolor. I use a colored ink. Yeah, it's so much easier. Watercolor is very hard color theory wise to use, whereas a lot of the I use a dye ink brand called Distress Ink, and all the colors that you see me use are not maybe straight out of the bottle, but pretty close. They have colors that were very similar to my digital palette at the time, so I could kind of convert what I was doing digitally to a more analog process, like hand paint stuff. But yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Like that's very interesting to me. I mean, can you speak to me a little bit about, I mean, as somebody who's worked in the professional, you know, realm, like, and is now working like on Kickstarter, not saying that the Kickstarter isn't professional, obviously comics are the realm of comics is like heading into God knows how many directions, like, you know what I mean? So I don't obviously I interview a lot of Kickstarter creators and I don't consider them not professional, you know what I'm saying? But what are the challenges like working in Kickstarter or for yourself versus, I mean, the answer may be obvious to anyone listening out there, versus like when you're working on whatever book for whatever company, you know, that is coming out? Like what do you think some of the challenges are as far as getting your own stuff out there?
Well, I mean, one of the main challenges for me is I'm not very good at social media or
join the club.
Super interested in it either.
Yeah.
You know, I have trouble being super interested in promoting myself that much.
Yeah.
But I mean, speaking of your point, like there is a lot more options of what you can do in comics now than you could before. Like, I mean, when I got started again, like there was previews.
Yeah.
You could self-publish something, offset printing. You had to print like a couple thousand copies or something, and you got a little blurb in previews and send them your 2,000 copy minimum or whatever and hope for the best.
Yeah.
And that's what people did, and that is crazy. But now you have so many options, like you can just do it yourself. The printer I use is just down the street from me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we lucked out and found just like a really great local printer. They don't do many comics. Like comics aren't really their thing.
Yeah.
But they do them because a few of us around here want them, and they're like, okay. And they get actually pretty excited about it because mostly what they do is stuff for postal service and
advertising. You
know, kind of more general clients and stuff. And so when we show up with comics, they're like, ooh, we get to have some fun.
Yeah.
You know, and they've been great to work with, but everything is so much more accessible than it was. Like, you don't have to make 2,000 copies of something and hope for the best. Like that's a lot of money just to invest in something that you're hoping, you know, will do okay. But Kickstarter gives you that option, like crowdfunding in general does. But like the thing with publishers that's nice is you do the book, they handle most of the things, and then you hand them the book in, and then you're done.
Yeah.
Whereas this, you're having to figure out everything ahead of time, like how much things are going to cost and all that. But since we've done a few of these, we know that at this point. But the back end of it, you finish the book. I still have to do all the design for the book. I have to do like all the putting it together. We get the lettering done. I stick that back on, run over the printer, get all that done, get things shipped. Travis handles all that stuff, so I don't have to worry about that. But we try to divide things up a bit.
You
But
do
it's
the hard
definitely a lot.
stuff. You're doing the
It's
hard stuff.
definitely, well, don't have to lift any boxes, so that's fine.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. No, one of the things that must be satisfying for you, I mean, like as far as Starlight or a Kickstarter project or an independent project is, like you're doing much of it and you can do whatever you want, right? Like as far as like story and stuff like that goes. I mean, that must be satisfying, right? Because I mean, if you're working for another company's book or whatever, would you say that you might be like that this sort of gives you a certain amount of artistic freedom where you're just like, I just, I want to make the cat aliens look like this. And so they look like this, or I want to add texture onto the walls, so I'm going to do it. Like you being the art person, I mean, do you have complete control over what it looks like for the most part?
Sure, and that's obviously one of the advantages you have. It's also a disadvantage in that nobody's telling you like your idea is terrible, and
Do you ever
you're not getting
submit
that kind of.
feedback or like ask for feedback or like stuff like that?
Sure, but if you have a really good editor, they're going to point out things that you're not necessarily. I mean, you're a little blind to your own work, right?
Sure. Yeah,
Like
absolutely.
you're in a blind spot on it. Like it looks great to you, or you think this is a great idea, but it might be like, oh, here's a better idea, or that doesn't really work, whatever. So there are things that are great with working with publishers, but you're definitely doing what they want and on their schedule, which depends on how that works out for you. Both publishing wise and scheduling wise, you can certain companies like have great creator-owned deals, but it may be like 3 years before it comes out, and everything is back end there, so you're not going to see any money for like a couple of years. But Kickstarter, you're like you can wake up one day and be like, hey, I'm gonna put out a book today. Just set up a Kickstarter for it, like there you can do, and that's how I ended up on Kickstarter was. I had a book with David Walker, and it was a wrestling book called One Fall, and we were kind of shopping around, and people were just not getting back to us very quickly, as what happens when you're pitching stuff, and we were just like, hey, we could just do a Kickstarter and see what happens. And within a couple of weeks, we had a Kickstarter going, and it got funded, and we were like, okay, this makes sense.
No, that's cool. I mean, yeah, obviously things are changing for everyone if you have the sort of nerve and the will to start up a Kickstarter. I hear the anxiety quotient can be kind of high for certain people. That's why I've never done it and the time commitment. But I mean, you guys are
I
up
mean,
to issue
you
six.
are definitely, yeah, you're definitely facing rejection in a way that's different than just pitching things to publishers and they say, nah, or whatever. You're doing it in the public forum, like whether your thing is like going to go or not, and sometimes whether people buy it or not has not has very little to do with the actual thing, depending on timing and just so many factors involved. But it's definitely anybody who doesn't have like a huge, following or anything that's just like I'm gonna do a Kickstarter and see what happens. Like it's brave, man.
Again, I'm the coward in the room. I'm not like friends have been like, you should do it. And I'm like, I'm not gonna do it. But one of the things I really wanted to ask you too was about the design of the characters, right? Like you've got like a cool spider alien type of thing. I specifically remember talking to Travis and Gregory about the cat creatures, like the cat aliens. I was like, I love the cat aliens. They look great. Like they're great. They remind me a little bit of there's a cat in Saga a little bit that kind of had the ears, but I love the cat aliens, but the one thing that sticks out to me, particularly in the read through, well, I think originally too, is the female character, the hat that she wears. Like, and I think you guys gave that out as a Kickstarter reward, right? Like at one point.
Yeah.
How did you, I mean, it's always the stupid question that I have to ask, but it's like, how do you approach your character designs? Where do they come from? Where do they come from this book? Like what, well, cause I mean that, at least for the female character, it's very distinctive. She's got the pacifier. She's got the hat on and she's got the baggy. Like it's a look that it's like you could make like an action figure out of that. And people who knew Starlight would be like, I know what that is, right? Like, can you talk to me about your character design?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is like it's important to make those things kind of iconic that you could have anyone do a drawing of it and people still know who that character is.
Yeah.
You know, I've always been attracted to pink quite heavily. And so I pop her design with a lot of pink.
Yeah.
Between the hat and the trip pants. I took just like a bunch of things that I would see around and I designed my own cat hat.
Yeah.
Because I mean you can get bun hats around, I designed that one, and then one of Travis's friends actually made some for us for the Kickstarter.
That's awesome.
And that was, it was rad. Like I've got one of them. But yeah, they're great. But that, you know, that kind of stuff, like I'm always trying to make something that looks at least somewhat distinctive. There are a lot of references to things like the body armor on the cat aliens is a bit based off of aliens. There's a few things based off of aliens in this book.
Oh, gotcha.
But there's there're various references to things, but yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's just you kind of know when you see it, and you're like, "Yep, this is the one." But just thinking about like contrast and stuff. Like, I wanted to contrast between the those characters and like some of the aliens, and you know, I've got reds and pinks against a lot of greens and purples and things. Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily try to put too much thought into it, but at the same time, like it's, you know, I'll have an idea in my head of like what it should look like, whether that comes out that way or not necessarily the case, but yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I'm scrolling through the fourth issue and I'm like, and compared to the first issue, the cat aliens look a little less cat-like. And he did that, was just that, like the development that you wanted to make or?
I mean, I probably just wasn't looking hard enough at the early issues.
I totally understand. As somebody who works on his comic like sparingly, it's like, what did that character look like? Like, I got to go back and like, were they supposed to have a gun in that panel or something? Yeah. No, I understand.
I'm not necessarily the best person to stay on model on certain things, but sure. Hopefully it's consistent enough.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, I mean, I get what's what and who's who, but I was just scrolling through that fourth issue and I was like, oh yeah, they look a little different. But yeah, again, it's because it's on the iPad now.
I mean, it's funny, like when you do a book very quickly and you don't really have time, you know, in between things to really think about anything or time away from something.
Yeah.
You're just plowing through like a 5 or 6 issue book.
Yeah.
Like it's going to stay a little bit more consistent because it's just happening so quickly.
Yeah.
But like sometimes there were a couple months in between issues or something, or a bit while they were rewriting the script or something. So I'd be away from it. And then I come back to it after a bit and not really remember how exactly I was drawing things, but
sure,
you know, that's just the way it is.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, I totally get it. And it still looks great. I was just noticing the difference. I was just like, oh, wow. And that was 3 years ago. So that's fine.
Yeah, it was three years ago, but we're getting it done.
No, it's great. I mean, you're being consistent. I mean, that was the thing is, again, stuff ends up in my promotions or spam. I don't always look at those folders. And I was like, oh, wait, they're doing issue 6. And then I went back and looked and I was like, wait, I don't have issue 5. I'm going to have to like, what happened? So at one point I must have missed a launch by, just by not paying attention. But, congratulations on funding for issue 6. I mean, you guys certainly deserve, all the accolades and the money and the credit. So if people are out there, look up Starlight on Kickstarter and throw it some money, because, it would be great to get everyone paid and have, the final issue is the 7th issue, you were saying?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And we hope to do that Kickstarter by the end of the year.
Gotcha. Yeah, well.
When we get this one wrapped up and then on to the next one.
Absolutely. Good. How far are you on that issue? Are you like done or like drawing? Or?
No. I'm trying.
You're like, no, that's
great. Nah,
<I'm trying. laughs> I like it. Well, any final thoughts on Starlight, sir, or anything that we've been chatting about?
The Starlight Kickstarter is going on now.
Where can people find you online?
You can go to starlightkickstarter.com to get info on the Kickstarter. I'm on most of the socials, Brett Weldley. And you can also grab Victory, currently out from Dynamite. Issue 3 just came out last week for that.
Nice.
Vampirella Universe book. And the trade for The Approach came out from Boom last week as well. And I colored that one.
Oh, nice.
So always got things.
Brett Weldley, Weldley. That's how you would find you on social.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And you have a website too, correct? And an Etsy, right?
I did have a website. I wasn't getting much traffic to it, so I kind of shut it down for the time being.
Oh, but, I thought I found it. So, oh, okay. Maybe I was looking at something else. Maybe I was.
But I do have an Etsy. You can find me through there using my name.
It's beautiful stuff, people. Go out there and check it out. I was looking through and I was like, ooh, this is great. Very nice. Very nice. Yeah. So, thank you for joining me, Brett. I really appreciate your time and thank you for taking the time for chatting with me. Congratulations on funding, and I hope you get more money, and I hope you finish the series. And, I just want to see nothing but success for you, Travis, and Greg. So, like, I just, I've enjoyed the book through the years, and getting you to the finish line is what I want to see.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Again, the artist's name is Brett Weldley. The Kickstarter is Starlight, issue 6. Just go to Kickstarter and search for Starlight. And it's Starlight, star and LITE, not LIGH. It's LITE, Starlight, number 6 on Kickstarter. Thank you very much, Brett. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks, man.
Again, my name is Christian Horn. This has been another episode of the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. You can check us out on parttimefanboy.com. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. We are still on Facebook. We are still on Instagram. We are not on the hellscape called X or Twitter, whatever it is anymore. Thank you for listening. Please go support Starlight on Kickstarter. And we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Fanboy. Fanboy.com.